Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is BJ. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, BJ.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. The restrooms are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs, kind of diagonally. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So this evening, we're discussing step three. I'd love if you guys could help me welcome our panel this evening. We have Dean and Bob. So I will read the first paragraph, which tonight will be on page 60, and then our panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. And a quick refresher. Step three is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. So page 60. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought.
Okay. Let's see. My name's Dean Robertson, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dean.
I'll say before I even start, I have had, going over step three this time, I'm in the middle of doing a pretty serious, thorough fourth step inventory again. And some combination of that and reading back over the step three material has, I've read it differently than I have ever, I think, before. And one thing I realized about what BJ just read is that I've always taken that that little section. I've always taken that little section, our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, our personal adventures before and after make three pertinent ideas. That's always, I've kind of skimmed over that. And there's something about that language, adventures. Not only did any nothing I did in when I was drinking qualify as an adventure, but I've had a lot of bad stuff in sobriety that I would not think nobody who knows me would call an adventure. So I really did. I mean, I'm sort of kidding, but I really didn't pay much attention to that. And what I paid attention to this time, however, is the next part. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. And that's a change of tone for me. And what that says basically is, I am a drunk. I have made a mess of my life, and nobody can help me. And I'm left with God. And then there is that little qualifier that AA always throws in. God could and would if he were sought. If I seek God, God can help me. It's one of the things I have come to terms with in the last couple of years from sponsoring people, go figure, is that this is a very conditional program. You know, I get the goods if I work for them and if I use them to serve others. And that's fine print in the contract. My sponsor says we talk about maintaining our spiritual condition. And she says maintaining your spiritual condition just means one thing, telling the truth. So it's simple, but it's a lot of hard work. And so I am right at the beginning of this. I'm brought to the table on this thing. Nobody can help me. I'm a drunk. I've screwed it up. And there's nobody that can help me. And if I seek God, God can and will. So that's, thank you.
My name is Bob, recovered alcoholic.
Hey, Bob.
And by saying that, I meet the conditions of the first two parts of A and B, in my concept, anyways. Turning my will and life over the care of a higher power of God. Now, billions of people do that every day. Churches on Sundays and Saturdays. However, for me, there's a condition that I have to meet before I need to turn my will and life over the care of a higher power. And that's called being an alcoholic. You know, if I didn't have to be an alcoholic and not stop drinking on my own, I wouldn't need a higher power to do that for me. I'd have stopped drinking a long time ago and went about my way. Or I would have found a way to drink normally and safely. Isn't that the great obsession? So to me, when we read these things about the description of the alcoholic, I knew what I was like as an alcoholic. And I knew what I tried to do to not drink or drink safely, and I couldn't do it. But when I started hearing other people, their stories, their adventures or their catastrophes or their jail sentences or their other things that happened to them that I could relate to, I could see that maybe I could identify with other people who had the same problem, alcoholism. Or just problem drinking, or my life was a complete mess and I was suicidal by the time I was 21. You know, that's my story in a nutshell. Because I tried to turn my will and life over the care of God at 17. You know, I identified drinking was not a good thing for me at 17, and I went on a church retreat and became a born-again Christian for 4 days. Because when we get to the end of this little thing tonight, this thing called rigorous action. Now, if you're a Christian or other denomination, they required rigorous action in their faith, too. So I went on this retreat to Nag's Head with a bunch of other Christian people in high school, and I got on my knees and accepted Jesus, and 4 days later I was drinking because nothing else changed. Mm-hmm. At 19, I tried the same thing. I got back involved with the Catholic Church for 6 months, and nothing changed, and I went back to drinking again. So I had to become convinced that I'm an alcoholic. See, that part B is, no human power could relieve me. That means I can try every way possible by using other people, places, and things to relieve me of the madness of my brain. Alcoholic thinking. Because booze worked for a while, right? If If I could use booze safely right now, I would. But I can't. And that's where I had to come to the terms of that is I had to use everything available in my life to not drink. My family, my coworkers in the Navy, psychiatrists, church members, anything I could try to manipulate, manage, and control to make me drink safely, I tried multiple times. And it failed multiple times. To the end of my drinking, I was suicidal. I couldn't drive safely or legally. I was facing a long jail sentence. I had no car. I sold my car for $15 to a junkyard. And I was faced with one condition. Keep on drinking and die, or find a way to not drink. And that's where I got to meet with that. God couldn't wait for a sought part. You know, how we find God is really varied things for everybody. For me, it was I tried every other door possible, and they all closed shut. And when you get to the end of the hallway, and it's either a big cliff to jump off of or find some spiritual help, I accepted spiritual help. And that's my story in a nutshell.
Thanks, Bob.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Our second reading is still on page 60. Being convinced, we were at step 3, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may be sometimes quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, and generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits.
Sure, I can go first this time. Being convinced, that's a pretty powerful word for me. Because I took a lot of drinking to convince me that drinking was the problem. I like to blame people, places, things, events, anything but accept responsible for my drinking. Not a good thing to do when you're drunk like me. Because the longer I drank, the worse the problems got. And I had this revolving storyline in my life up in my head. You know, because I could think all these things, arranging the lights and the play. I arranged everything around me on a daily basis. A lot of times. I had these big adventures of how I was going to change the people I worked with, how I was going to screw them over for what they did to me. Anybody identify? So I could, everything happened up here. I had limited ability to actually act upon those things because I was scared. You know? Because you actually have to involve yourself in other people's lives in order to make things happen. But I had this revolving storyline of my life, how great I was and how wonderful I was and how virtuous I was, and I was going to solve all the world's problems at the bar stool, right? That's how I convinced myself that this requirement of self-will and self-will one riot is not successful, because my life was not very successful. I had multiple DUIs. I was failing in the Navy. They wanted to kick me out, which is really hard to do. I lost all my drinking friends in the Navy, which is even harder to do. Nobody wanted to drink with Bob, and I was 21. Always in collision with other people. Always in collision with other people. It's an amazing process when you have problems with everybody you run into, everybody, not just a couple people. And then when you realize that you're the problem, not them, that's a really rude awakening for me. Because I would always manipulate and manage and blame others, rationalize my behavior. Good motives. Who didn't have good motives? All my motives were good, weren't they? No matter how bad they screwed you over. Stealing from my mom's purse on a regular basis, lying to my family. Showing me, the Navy really was unhappy because I didn't fit into their ideal plan. You know, I would show up drunk every morning for muster in yesterday's uniform with no shave and no shower, and they wanted me to clean my act up. I don't understand what the problem was. And then at the end of that time frame, I really realized when I saw some of my evaluations later on that I was really screwed up. My thinking was really all about me. Over the years, that's kind of changed much. But initially, when I first got sober, I couldn't see that. It was impossible for me to see myself for who I really was. I glossed it over and painted a pretty picture for a long time, and I believed that for a long time. But when enough people told me the truth, I actually had to learn to listen, and I'll pass.
Thanks, Bob. I was just freaked out when I read that, being convinced. What? I was not convinced of whatever it was I had just read. I was not convinced, and for a long time, I could not relate to that whole story about the actor at all. I thought that was just kind of trite, and it didn't seem to me to have much substance to it, and I didn't like it. I mean, I didn't even dislike it. It was just kind of boring, and I skipped over it, but I fixed on one phrase in there. In collision. I was in collision with everybody I knew all the time. My life was one collision after another. Now, my problem was that it took me a long time, like until last week, to connect the dots, because I continued to perceive the collisions the same way I perceived my drunks, one at a time, as individual incidents. It really, in some ways, took me until last week to see that it was one big collision, and they were all the same, really. They were all basically the same dynamic. It is certainly true that the world and its people had done me wrong in some cases. I'm in the middle of a situation now, and I've got to say, the other people have behaved badly. But Alcoholics Anonymous teaches me something very profound. The response to that fact is, so what? So what if they are wrong? So what if they are behaving badly? So what if they have 95% and I have 5? Doesn't make any difference to me. What can I do about that? Nothing. And that has been part of my step 3 work this week, is my 4th step inventory work. Because I suddenly read this thing and I thought, David tells me I can't curse, but if I could, I would tell you what I thought. It's me. It's me. Every time. It's me. And that's what that third step is about for me, is looking that in the face. It's me. And I can do something about that. I don't know what. That's the next part of this reading, you know. Just what were we supposed to do? And I'm thinking, I don't know. Don't ask me yet. I don't know. The one of the great pieces of wisdom about step 3, which I had a terrible amount of trouble with when I first was presented with it. Joe and Charlie have a very good answer for that. Talking about trouble with step 3. How do you work step 3? 4 through 9. 4 through 9. Or as a friend of mine in Michigan used to say, no matter what I was whining about, Dean, just continue. Just continue. Step 3 is a, you know what I've discovered about these darn steps? They're all inventory steps, you know, every one of them. but made a decision to turn my will and my life over. I don't do that, but I have to if I want to stay sober. Thanks.
Thank you. Our third reading is on page 61. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only he manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony?
My name's Still Dean. I am a producer of confusion. That's something I've had to come to terms with. I was telling friends of mine in between meetings that one of my many favorite stories about my wonderful unrecovered alcoholic mother was when I called to tell her that I was getting married for the third time. She said, "Oh, honey, I think that's wonderful. Does he know about your fits?" That is a true story. I never related to this. I never got it. I never saw myself as trying to control the situation or manipulate other people, either for good or bad motives. I just sort of, I used to say this, I have lived my life by just kind of walking down the road and reacting to whatever fell in the road in front of me. Well, there is a certain amount of truth to that, but boy, I did a lot of manipulating and controlling. And I, during this epiphany last week, that's one thing I love about AA. Boy, we're always in kindergarten. We're always in kindergarten, thank God. I see it. I do that. I used to have contempt for people who said, "Oh, I always saw myself as a victim." And I thought, I don't want to hear that. I always saw myself as a victim. I always saw the dynamic around me, and what I saw was the people who did not understand me, and so were somehow out to get me. And again, they may have been, and with good cause in some cases, but again, so what? My job is to make a decision to turn my will and my life, my thinking and my behavior, over to the care of God as I understand God. That's my job at this point in the steps. It's very simple. I'll tell you something scary, as they always tell you, if you're having trouble with a step, it's probably because you hadn't done the one before it, so you need to go back. So I would go back to two and discover I didn't believe anything was any more powerful than my insanity. So then I would have to go back to one. So that, that was it for me. For a long time, I would always end up back at one. But no, you get to three, and you're at a jumping off place, and I don't like jumping off places. And so I did everything I could do mentally to avoid the very simple thing that step asks me to do, which is, if I want what AA promises me, which is that God will give me everything, first of all, God is going to take everything. And that's how that works. I have to say, I give up. Do whatever you will. I don't like it. To this day, I don't like it. I do not like that paradigm. I don't like it. But I surely do like being sober. So, thanks.
Still, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
I'm thinking here about being a self-seeker. Why do I need to be a self-seeker? What's the motive for that? I've done some introspective work over the years, and I realize that I have a really low self-esteem. I really don't like myself, and I never really have, all through my whole life. So I needed to have outside pats in the back, outside people liking me, respecting me. I spent a lot of time and effort working hard to get people to like me. Everywhere I went, I would figure out what kind of crowd I was in and then fit right in. No matter what kind of, the jocks I could fit in with, the book people I could fit in with, anywhere, anyhow, I would figure out the easiest shortcut to make people to like me, because I didn't like myself. I had nothing worth offering other people except what I could fake. That's not a good way to go through life. So we learn early on this delusion of outward persona. I'm going to show you exactly what I think you want to see. But inwards, I'm not going to show you nothing about who I really am, right? I'm hiding. I'm faking life. And when things didn't go my way, of course, I become either more angry and indignant, more self-serving and more manipulative, or I would just screw you over and leave. You know, I'm good at ending relationships real quick, no matter what kind of relationship it is. If it's like even like the 7-Eleven guy. You know, those are relationships. They're very short, temporary relationships, but they're there. And I've learned over the years that if I don't get what I want, you got nothing to offer me, right? But if you have something worth I want, you know, I have no problem trying to manipulate and manage and figure out how to get it. You know, I can be really nice. At least I think I'm really nice. I can play that part really well. It's not fun to do that. I'm thinking about how I grew up in life with two sisters and how I always wanted more. You know, the bigger pieces of pie, the more cookies, you know, more allowance money, and then less work involved. How to get out of chores. Anybody grew up with family like that? We had assigned chores all growing up? I did. I didn't like them. I didn't like working hard. I'm the easier, softer kind of guy. You know, but when you're finally faced with the facts of that, when you're finally shown that nobody else really cares about your BS anymore, right? You're faced with some awful truths, right? Then you have two choices. Keep on drinking to the bitter end or change. Change is not easy. Changing your behavior once you get sober is very hard. Some of my behavior is still very difficult, though. I'm just who I am. But I've learned how to not manipulate things as much as I used to, and I really try hard now to see what's in it for other people. You know, being of service to others is really hard for most alcoholics I've met, because then the bottom line is, what's in it for me? See, it's really easy to do step three if they give a crystal ball with it. You can see the future. Here's step three, you're gonna do it, and here's the exact results of why you do. Right? See, when I was going to church, the crystal ball said, if you do these things, you're going to get to heaven. Right? You're going to do good things in life, become a good Christian, and you'll go to heaven. If you do the opposite, you're going to go to hell. That's just what I learned in religion. But I get to AA, and they say, turn your will and life under the care of God. The results are, you'll live life sober and happy. Sober and happy and productive. If you don't, you'll live a life of misery and drinking and death. Good options, huh? But how to do step three is really challenging, and we'll get to that in a minute.
Thank y'all. Next reading is also on page 62. On page 62. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help.
Uncle. Certainly. Wishing things to change. Who didn't spend lots of time late at night wishing that whatever problem you were in would go away before you woke up in the morning? I spent a lot of time doing that. I had this whole thing figured out how if I did this, this, and this, the problem would change to my favor. I didn't realize if I actually asked for help, whether it's a higher power or somebody greater than me, I might get a result quicker. So I spent a lot of time up in my head figuring out all the scenarios of life and then picking the best one, right? That's what we do, don't we? But I didn't realize that all that stuff was self-will. It's all about me. What's my life going to be like if I do this? What's going to change if I do this and I get this out of it? What am I going to miss out if I don't do that? That's even more important, right? If I lose something that I really want to have. But I don't really think that's the problem, right? No one goes through life thinking that they're the problem, and if they actually require or request some help and support from a higher power, that things will change faster. So, self will run riot. I think that's one of the greatest statements in the whole book. Because you know, my life was run riot. I mean, I made a lot of poor decisions from an early age all the way up till I was 21. I don't think I made one healthy decision at all in that whole 21 years of life that I can think of. But I did a lot of bad things to a lot of bad people. You know, I did a lot of negative stuff to whenever I could get away with it. But then I would rationalize that stuff, right? Because they were worse, right? They did that to me. You know, the police officer, he really shouldn't have cuffed me that hard, right, when I was blowing a .26. You know? I mean, the judge should not have sentenced me that long to jail on my second DUI, right? If I would have learned the first time, I wouldn't have got a second DUI. Or the third DUI, or the fourth DUI, which I don't have yet, but it's possible. But so I'm thinking about how do we really reduce self-will and self-centeredness? Well, just like if I could really wish for my hair to grow right now, right? I'm going to really wish really, really, really hard for my hair to grow or lose weight or gain money. You know, those also require work. I could go get hair right now. I could go down to the nearest hair place and get plugs input in and put some money down and got some Rogaine and some other stuff and get hair. But I don't really need hair. But I can't think that process, right? What I need to do is get on my knees and ask God for some support and acceptance of who I am and what I am. That's the even better part to me. But that whole problem is, who really wants to accept responsibility for their actions, right? I didn't want to accept any responsibility for anything in my life. I was the master of rationalizing and blaming other people all through every part of my life, all through junior high and high school, whenever I got sent down to the principal's office. It was the guys I hung out with. They did the wrong thing. I was just there in the wrong place at the wrong time, right? When we stole a car, I wasn't really driving the stolen car. I was just, you know, hanging out with somebody's, you know, they let us borrow it. I can make up some really good stories. When we stole the 12-pack from the 7-Eleven every Saturday afternoon when the beer truck was there, they had a lot of extra beer, right? They don't really need, I needed the beer more than they did. I could come up with some really good stories, you know. Taking money from my mom, that's always a fun thing, right? My mom had lots of money. $20 is not that big a deal. She can go work and get some more money. I took a long time to pay my mom back, let me tell you. But then you realize God makes things possible. Because I tried every way possible to make my life better. Didn't we all? We made a lot of effort to make our lives on a regular basis improved. I did a lot of time and effort living up my head trying to make things better. And nothing changed. But I got to AA and I made some simple decisions. Followed some simple instructions from other people. And guess what? Everything I wanted in life that I tried before I got to AA, I've gotten since I've got to AA, and more. There's another thing, moral and philosophical conventions, right? Moral and philosophical conventions. I mean, I had these really great grand ideas of who I was, right? We really think we're great people with great impact on other people. We can make other people's lives really great. I thought I could. I was the greatest guy around. I was always trying to help other people. As long as I had something in return. Right? There's always strings attached in my life. But when you start, when you run out of friends to help because they don't want your help, you know, they're tired of paying the strings back. When your family doesn't want you around anymore because they're tired of taking the money, right, and having to bail you out of jail, it's the worst phone call you can make is call your mom from jail at 9 o'clock on a Sunday. Try it. I've done it a couple times. It's not fun. Or even more, the next week when you need money to go out drinking and you have to borrow mom. That's the fun stuff you do. When I was drinking, you'd swallow that guilt and pride and ask for some help, right? Then when you really needed help, when you really needed some support, turn to God? Are you kidding me? No, I'm going to try some other humans first. I don't trust that God bit. Here's a story I learned about God. Is alcoholic early sobriety is one around this little cliff. It's getting darker and darker out, and he's all by himself, and he falls off the cliff, and he grabs this branch, and he's yelling and screaming for help. God, help me. God, help me. And he hears this big, loud voice. Just let go, my son. You'll land on earth. And the alcoholic says, anybody else up there? And the alcoholic's still hanging on there and hanging on all night long, and he won't let go. And he finally, light comes up, right, and he looks down and grounds 4 feet away. That's my life, and I don't want to let go, and I'll pass.
Thanks. I don't know why I have to keep looking at this thing over and over again. I think that the extreme example of self-will run riot and this business about selfishness, that's fear. That is driven by fear for me. I am normally fairly selfish, which is not a pleasant thing to look at in yourself. But I am never more selfish than when I am afraid. When I am afraid, nothing exists but me. I cannot get myself out of it. And again, we come back to step three. I cannot get myself out of it. Nobody can help me. I'm in trouble and nobody can help me. And that's where I have to get to over and over and over again in order to turn anything over to anybody. I don't trust that. I don't trust that if I let go of the steering wheel, my higher power will drive me in. I simply don't, most of the time, don't believe it. The fact that I routinely drove myself into a brick wall does not occur to me. You know, I think about these ideas now and these, you know, people talk about trying to quit drinking and I couldn't quit drinking. And I never tried to quit drinking. I never thought about, I don't know what I thought about. I mean, one of my stories that I tell in meetings is I was drinking straight vodka at 7 o'clock in the morning, pregnant, and it never crossed my mind that I had a drinking problem. It never came into my mind that I might have a drinking problem. I don't know how to explain that. I never thought about my drinking. I never gave it a thought. I was a binge drinker, so I had these nice long stretches of time when I didn't take a drink. But every time I took a drink, 100% of the time, I got sloppy, blackout, knee-walking drunk. You could take it to the bank. And somewhere along the line in AA meetings, I heard other people's stories, and I thought, and my other thing when I came into AA was one of my many mantras. I was a high bottom drunk. Well, I don't even know what that means today. I drank a lot of vodka. I drank enough vodka that I drank enough that I don't know why it didn't kill me. I don't know why I didn't die of alcohol poisoning on one of those tubes. I am playing the same song here, but I have to be brought down mighty low before I can stomach this step and move on. And so ultimately I couldn't stomach it. And I didn't understand what it meant, and I didn't know what the heck anybody intended for me to do about it. And then I heard that Joe and Charlie tape. And I'm a retired school teacher. I could do step four. It's homework. It's homework. Get out a pen and paper. Yes, I could do it. And somewhere between 4 and 9, I woke up one day and discovered I had worked step three. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I didn't want to do it, didn't like it. And I don't know about the people-pleasing thing, but I refer you back to my mother's comment about my fits. I didn't please anybody. So, and I was proud of that. Thanks for letting me share.
Next reading is on page 62 also. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are the agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arc through which we passed to freedom.
I love Bill Wilson's buildings analogies. I always have terrible dreams about buildings. I always dream about a building that, you know, the attic is all full of light, but there are rabid dogs in the flooded basement. So I appreciate this walking to freedom, putting together a building. I didn't like all this director and father and all this stuff either. This whole part of the big book really was not of much interest to me. I'm now realizing I kind of skimmed it. One thing I did notice last week was that actually it was over the weekend. Is that they, you know, they don't ever mention this actor's acting. He's too busy. I bet he was really bad. You know, he's too busy arranging everybody else's jobs. Nobody ever says a word about, you know, I bet he was, they fired him, I bet you they did. Just like they fired me, those terrible people. I am very attracted to, and I was kidding about it, but I'm very attracted, and it means something to me, that analogy that he uses about the keystone of, wait, I'll knock this over. It's just a question of time. The keystone holds the whole thing together. And we've got it right here, this thing that I resisted and resisted and resisted and stood there while that thing crashed down on my head again, and I couldn't figure out why, and it was because I could not manage this step. And I do have days when I can sense myself walking through that arch to freedom. Not every day. I am not always happy, joyous, and free. I'm going to quote a friend of mine in this room who I have quoted uncountable times during the last week, I had an email from her at the end of which she said, I hope that you are healthy and happy enough. I am healthy and happy enough if I come to AA and I work the steps and I try hard not to figure it out. That's the kiss of death for me, all that moral, philosophical thing. If I just keep coming and I just keep trying to make that decision and then move on to step four. And the miracle happens somewhere, some days.
Yeah, Bill Wilson's got some great and grand ideas. I tell you, I'm a simple drunk. And so who really wants to realize and accept that they're playing God in their lives? Not me. I just like to be in control. Right? I want to control my life every minute of every day. And I spent a lot of time proving that I was right all the time. So I had to break this down into simple concepts, and there's really two of them for me. First off is quit playing God means surrender. That's all it means. Surrender the concept that I'm in charge and control of my life on a regular basis. I still have choices and decisions to make and actions followed, but I'm not the one who's really guiding me. I've found some greater principles in life that I actually work on a regular basis. Every day I try them. But first off, you have to come up to the conclusion that when you play God or control your life, it doesn't work anymore, right? Because if it worked, I wouldn't need AA or higher power or anything else. I can control and manage my life and live happy, joyous, and free. But I couldn't do that. My controlling and managing my life and playing God on a regular basis ended me up in jail with suicidal thoughts and, more importantly, the inability to stop drinking on a regular basis. I could not, for the life of me, stop drinking. I tried really, really hard for several years to not drink, and I couldn't make it 4 days. And when I drank, I didn't feel good, which is really worst thing for an alcoholic is when you wake up drunk and still feel bad about it. There's no joy in Mudville when you're drunk like me, right? Life was a chore for 9 months of my last 9 months of drinking. I had multiple DUIs and had multiple jail sentences, and I couldn't stop drinking, even on Anabuse, for 6 months. And that was horrible. I prayed and prayed and prayed for an end to that. I lost my license and my ability to drive legally, but I would borrow my buddy's cars in the Navy and drive their cars illegally and look for a place to crash my car, or their car, into a wall. Right? I wanted to end my life as quickly as possible. That's what playing God did for me, was I had no joy, no life, no hope. To me, hopeless drunk means that you can't drink safely and you can't stop drinking. However, life sometimes prolongs that agony for many years. I was lucky to only have mine last for about 6 months, and I found AA. The second part is, once you figure out that you got to stop playing God, is what do you do next, right? Accept spiritual help, right? Accepting spiritual help is not always easy. Because the thing about step three that killed me was God is to understand him, which means for me, I'm a really smart guy. I have to understand everything about God first, and then I put it into play. Right? You can figure out God really quickly. There's one question you have to ask yourself. Are you God? No. That's all you need to know. Right? That's all you need to know about God is you're not it. Then you can start actually taking action in the rest of the steps. But for me, I had to come to the point where any of my ideas were no longer valid. That's what they forget about this whole part about step three, is there's some concepts before that. We had to let go of our old ideas absolutely. That's a strong word, absolutely. Any idea of religion I had to change. Any idea or concept of God had to change. Any idea that I was in control of my life had to change. Doesn't come easy, and I'll pass.
Thank you. Our final reading is on page 63. We were now at step three. Many of us said to our Maker, as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him.
I think the first line of that prayer is one of the most radical things I've ever read in my life. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. I just couldn't do it for a long time, till last week. I had forgotten about this until this minute. I had a kind of an amazing step three experience, 20 years ago or something, a long time ago. I had, a friend had a beach house down in Florida, and she let me have it for a week. And I was there by myself. I did not have a car with me. I had taken a cab or something from the airport, and so there I was. And I decided that I would start every day saying the third step prayer when I got up, which I did. And this was there were dolphins right up by the beach. I mean, it was just wonderful. I spent the week not taking showers and walking on the beach and just, but what happened to me was that by the third day, I think, I came up out of sleep saying the third step prayer. I was saying it before I woke up. I no longer had to think about it. I was no longer getting up and saying the third step prayer. It was an incredible experience. Now, those mountaintop experiences don't last. They did when I was drinking vodka. I drank to hear the angels sing, and I heard them. But that is what I need to remember when I think about that third step prayer. I can get back to the mountaintop just for a little while on a given Wednesday morning in my house when the sun is coming through the window shining on my cat for, 2 minutes. I can be there. I can be back inside the third step. But then it sure tricks you. You get right up there on that mountaintop, and then it says, relieve me of the bondage of self so I can be more comfortable. No. So I can be of service. Take away my difficulties. I can't stand them anymore. Send me some money. That's not what it says. It says, take away my difficulties so I can be of service to others. It's just relentless. That's what it says. Every page, every time, I'm not going to work the steps with any more sponsees because it's too hard on me. But I get the goods at the end. And the goods are not bliss and all that. I don't know how in the world I drank as long as I did. The first time I ever got drunk, I was 16 years old, and I blacked out and I threw up and I had a hangover for 3 days, and that is how I drank every single time I drank until I was 40 and came into AA. Now, who drinks? I had no fun drinking. And I will close with one thing about surrender and the third step prayer. There is no miracle in this world that compares with the fact that my son was not born with fetal alcohol syndrome and is not an alcoholic.
So step three sounds pretty awe-inspiring. I've had two main concepts of when step three actually happened in my life. The first one was when I got to rehab and I was a hopeless, helpless drunk. And I did not, for any way possible, see how that could work for me. But nothing else seemed to work. So I had a little glimmer of maybe something will change. Now, all through rehab for 7 weeks, they hammer these steps down your throat and talk about them. And you go to meetings every day and you see people talking about the steps. And I just didn't buy into it. You know, I couldn't feel that. So I don't really think that I really bought into doing the formal step three then. But what I did was started turning my will to life over care of AA. You know, a group of drunks showed me how to live life without drinking. I finally found a way to not drink one day at a time for quite a while. And that worked about 4.5 years. I would go to meetings and not drink and get involved in service work and got to that step four and was really reluctant to do it. Now that vigorous and followed action house cleaning, not for Bob. And I was sober, things were good. That's all I needed to do, right? But that doesn't work for very long if you're drunk like me. So the second time I formally did step three was on a 12-step retreat up in Rhode Island with 4.5 years sobriety. They go through all 12 steps on that weekend, and I realized at that time that I wasn't very happy. I wasn't very productive, and nothing really changed. I was still a scared little brat. And I did that step three with another alcoholic that weekend, and I formally did that step three prayer with him on my knees. And I knew that I was turning my will and life over to care of something greater than me that I didn't have to understand or accept. And an analogy I use a lot in meetings is an alcoholic who's drinking is in a little lifeboat. And we're swimming along on the ocean of life, and life's getting a little worse. The waves are getting a little higher, and the wind's getting stronger, and we're keep on drinking, right? And it's okay, because I'm still in my little lifeboat. But then there's some holes in the boat eventually, right? And the water comes in, and then the boat catches on fire, right? And I'm still drinking, though. Things are going pretty good. And then you see this cruise boat of AA people coming by right next to you, right? Big, wonderful cruise boat. They're laughing and joking and having fun, and they're drinking their coffee and they're dancing and having fun on this boat, right? And your little stupid, crappy lifeboat is sinking, right? But they're asking you to take step three and join them on the boat. That's all they're asking. Hey, Bob, come up. And he said, no, I'm good. Now, I'm still up in the water. Got some more booze to drink, right? Then the sail goes away, and then the water's up, and you're barely hanging onto that lifeboat by the last little fingertips, right? Then they finally have to jump into that big cruise boat, right? Right before the last little bit of life goes away from you, right? It talks about in another chapter about how we drink to the brink of insanity or death. The brink of insanity or death, and then you'll accept spiritual help, not before, right? That's my life in a nutshell. So I finally got off my little sailboat of life that was really rocky and filling with water and drowning myself to death and got onto the big cruise boat of AA, right? That's all we ask you to do in step three is come join us and walk along the sobriety path, right? And we'll show you how to stay sober one day at a time. And then we'll show you in the book how to find the higher power. That's what it says in a little later on, right? But I wasn't willing to figure that out right off the bat because I'm a smart guy, right? I have to understand God immensely and completely all the time. Not really. Finally got down to keep it simple is just accept spiritual help in AA meetings and walk with people along the spiritual path, and we will find a way to be sober and happy. And that's what's worked for me. And guess what? It's 8 o'clock.
Thank you guys so much. Excellent. We're now going to pass the seventh tradition basket. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any AA-related announcements?
That's right.
Starting this Wednesday, September 5th, there's a new
parking lot on Princess Anne. It's going to be a step meeting out of the throng of law.
Thanks, Desiree. Any other announcements? Melissa?
My name is Melissa. I'm calling.
Melissa.
Starting tomorrow, Tuesday, there's another meeting. 7:30 p.m. at Trinity Festival Period. West Side Young is over.
West Side?
We're going to be using the 12 o'clock set study commission.
Thanks, Melissa.
My name is Bob, recovered alcoholic. For those who have not ever heard of the Wakefield Campfire Conference.
What?
That's the last full weekend in September in Wakefield, Virginia. It's a fellowship recovery weekend retreat, $70. I'm on registration, so see me after the meeting if you want any more questions. But it's a good weekend of good meetings, speakers. You can camp out or you can live in the dorms. David Francis shows up all the time, so he'll sing some songs to you at night on the campfire. And there's really good food. Iran's cooking the food, so if you like Iran, you'll like his food. Just saying. Thank you. September 28th through 30th, $70.
My name's Dean Robertson, and I don't want a big crush here, but there's a new meeting at Christ in St. Luke's in the basement, Monday through Friday at 6:45 a.m. And we are a month old. David comes and sings sometimes. We're a month old and several days, and you know, think we're going to make it. So if you're up, you know, you have insomnia, come join us.
Nicole?
I'm Nicole.
Okay, Nicole.
Tuesday, September 18th at 5:30, Facebook again is going to have a Suffering speaker. It's going to be Beth H. from Cary, North Carolina, and she wrote a chapter in the Big Book on page 512, and it's at Christ in St. Luke's.
Awesome. Anybody else? All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would love to welcome you.
Welcome.
I'm Jim, I'm an alcoholic.
Welcome.
Hey, welcome. Glad you're here.
My name's John, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
Glad you're here.
Anybody else?
Alexis,
welcome.
Anybody else? Yeah.
Hey,
welcome. Glad you're here.
Anybody else? Great. Glad y'all are here. We have literature available for sale over there at the table. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you'd like to purchase anything. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have any questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. Reminders. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, can you guys join me in thanking our panel? Thank you to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on step three. Could I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Jimmy?
Hi, my name is Jim. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jim. Hey, Jim.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass. For you and countless others, this is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thanks for reading. We're going to close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done.